Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey friends, welcome to Wrestle Buddies, GameSpot's wrestling podcast, both wrestling friendship and wrestling with friendship. It's been a while since I've said that. I am your host, 40 for 40, Matt Elfring, and with me, as always, Dark Order member, 40 for 40, Chris E. Hayner. Hi.
Join the Dark Order, Matt. Join DarkOrder.com. We're back from summer vacation.
And
And by summer vacation, I mean, what? I was traveling briefly. And then, well, we're also super busy.
And I went through what I would like to call a nervous breakdown and just didn't want to record.
Partly because we're super busy.
There's too much work to be done. I've got a lot going on at home.
What's the last one we did? Was it SummerSlam predictions or was it Adam Cole Bebe?
I think it was SummerSlam.
Wow. Sorry, guys. We endeavor for this to be a weekly podcast, but like also there's no time.
Also, we are 2/3 of a department that runs the entertainment section of a giant website.
Conglomerate.
Yes.
We are a conglomerate. And also, like, I'm still convinced that nobody at work knows that we do this podcast, and thus it can't be the top priority, although I kind of want it to be. I only want to be Wrestle Buddies.
It should be.
Matt, are your glasses broken?
Yeah, thank you for noticing. Right over here.
Yeah.
I've got blue electrical tape. I should have used black because black matches.
I'll tell you why it's better to use blue. It looks like you're making a fashion statement.
This is a fashion statement. The screw came out of my glasses.
Mm-hmm.
It's in there, but it will not screw back in because
Is it stripped?
This is bent so weird that it won't fit back in. And I have not had time to go to the eye doctor. Because Chris has been keeping up. I had water heater problems. We haven't had hot water in a day, which doesn't sound like a huge struggle. But guys, yesterday was shower day for the whole family, and no showers for us.
Matt, I'll be honest with you. I've never been to the eye doctor in my life.
Oh, it's not for everybody. It's not for everybody.
But like I'm the only. But like everybody in my family wears glasses.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm either the freak because I don't think my eyesight's bad.
That's what you think,
but like maybe I'm wrong.
I technically, when I first got glasses, the ones I'm wearing, I was only supposed to wear them while working on the computer.
Uh-huh.
Because I technically like,
but you wear them all the time.
Yeah, I could be like this and be okay.
This looks weird.
It does look weird, right? I look like a mugshot of someone from like Virginia that got arrested.
I did wear glasses recently. Lord Pumpernickel and I, we got to get in. Lord Pumpernickel, by the way, has created a wrestler, a wrestling persona for themselves to put in the real world that they hope will get them signed by AEW. But we should talk about that next week because I feel like I'm distracting a lot from like, we have a big honking interview this week.
We haven't even mentioned it.
Yeah. Like the whole purpose of this episode is we have a big honking interview with a genuine rock star.
I believe I have not looked this up. I'm going to guess multi Grammy winning.
Two Grammys.
Yeah.
97 and 98. One American Music Award.
Okay.
One MTV Europe Music Award. And Matt, two. Count them. Two. MTV Video Music Awards from the same year for two different videos. They got Video of the Year. Oh no, I'm sorry. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 MTV Video Music Awards. One video won Best Alternative Video. One video won, stay with me here, Video of the Year, Breakthrough Video, Best Direction, Best Visual Effects, Best Art Direction, and Best Cinematography.
And here's the best part. this person's musical career during the course of this interview is brought up zero times.
That's not true. That's not true, Matt. He brought it up a couple of times. So like, well, I have experience in the music industry.
No way.
Yeah, he did.
No, man, no way he does.
Oh, yeah. As if we don't know who Billy freaking Corgan is. Guys, we're talking to Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins. I will note the video that won all of the awards at the VMAs in 1996 is Tonight Tonight.
Yes. Beautiful music video based on kind of an homage to Trip to the Moon.
Yeah. But 1979, one of my personal favorite Pumpkin songs, won Best Alternative Video.
I was talking to guys in our D&D group last night about this interview because I hadn't seen him in a while. And I was like, oh, you interviewed Billy Corgan. And everyone has a different favorite or a different favorite Smashing Pumpkins song.
Yeah.
It's very not bad or weird.
Whose was Bullet with Butterfly Wings?
No one in our group.
Really? Well, I'll tell you what, Matt. Bullet with Butterfly Wings in 1997 won the Best Hard Rock Performance
at
the
Grammys. It's a fantastic song.
In 1998, Best Hard Rock Performance, The End is the Beginning is the End.
I believe in our group yesterday we talked about Today, which is fantastic. That's
the greatest
song.
Day.
Tonight, Tonight. And mine is Disarm.
Okay. Mine remains 1979. I love that. But
also,
track.
Like, I have like 30 favorite Pumpkin songs because, yeah. I mean, it's a Chicago band. I'm a Chicagoland boy. Anyway, so we're talking.
We're not talking to Billy Corgan about Smashing Pumpkins. He owns the National Wrestling Alliance, the NWA.
He purchased it. He's relaunched it. They're building it back up. You know, I mean, they have the name recognition, but they're building the league in a crowded atmosphere. But they have the means, the talent.
And some really good programming.
Good programming. And also, it's on the YouTubes, guys.
Yeah, man.
It's like easy to watch. Like, whole episodes are just up on the YouTubes. And also, Max the Impaler's on it. Like,
I'm saying.
They appear on a few episodes, and I'm super into Max the Impaler. Oh, this is what I didn't talk to him about, and I want to do before we get to the interview. Dirty Dango, formerly known Fandango, and JTG are in a tag team called the Dirty Sexy Boys.
Hell yeah.
It's the best thing ever, man.
Anyway, that is Breezango levels of cool.
And they're just swiveling their hips like they're having a good time. I mean,
we saw JTG at Mania Weekend.
Did we?
Yeah, he came out for his partner. There was an induction into the Hall of Fame. The Warrior Award was the other Crime Time member.
Oh, he came out for Shad.
Shad Gaspard. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. God, I can't believe I could remember Shad Gaspard's name. He was my favorite member of Crime. Like, I love JTG, but like Shad, I always thought like, wow, Shad could be world heavyweight champion easily.
Yeah.
He's a built dude who can wrestle like crazy. But anyway, we don't talk about that with Billy Corgan.
Let's go to this interview. Then we'll blabble away. Blabble, whatever. Here's Billy Corgan. It's most of the episode, guys. So enjoy.
Yeah.
Hey, friends. We got a very, very special guest today. I'm very excited. Chris is very excited. We'd love to welcome to the podcast none other than the NWA president, William Patrick Corgan, also known as Billy Corgan. Sir, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on.
Do we address you as William Patrick Corgan or do we address you as Billy? I want to make sure we're starting on the right level and everything's good.
This is perfect because wrestling is the perfect medium to discuss this very important question.
Yes.
Years ago, I jokingly, you know, you got the stupid signature in your emails, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I got some prompt. This is like 10 years ago. I got some prompt and it said, you know, what do you want to put here? And I jokingly wrote, my name is now William, because my real name is William, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a journalist that I was conversing with about something, a music journalist, picked up on it, ran a story or put it in a story, and suddenly it became like a thing where people were running headlines, now he wants to be called William, which is really funny because it's not like I changed my name to something it's not. I just wanted to be called my formal name, not my, because when I was a kid I was Bill because my dad was Billy, then I became Billy, but then Billy almost became like my stage name, right? That's how everybody knows me.
Yeah.
And as you know, working with professional wrestlers, you get used to calling them, especially if you know them personally, you'll call them sometimes by their real name and sometimes by their gimmick name, and they answer to both. So I answer to both. So I can't be offended. But in my mind, Billy is my gimmick name and William Patrick Corgan is my real name. But what's funny is in wrestling, I've been using William Patrick Corgan. So I think it's a gimmick name now, too.
So that's I was just going to say that now you have both of your names have become like character names.
I went with William Patrick Corgan because it's got a little bit more heat to it, right?
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
President William Patrick Corgan sounds more heat than President Billy Corgan. It just sounds like, ugh.
Well, the name William Patrick Corgan also just definitely sounds like the president of a wrestling federation.
Well, like, I believe the guy who has the money to pay for the wrestling federation.
Very, very true.
So NWA 74, August 27th and 28th in St. Louis. Lots of big matches, many of which are championship matches. What are you most excited for through that two-night card?
Well, I think what I would point to first is that Camille and Taya will be the main event for night one, and Tyrus and Trevor Murdoch will be the main event for night two. And so let's start with Camille. Everybody has to remember that when Camille came in, she wasn't really, she'd sort of washed out of the professional wrestling system, had been in the WWE system for a minute, wasn't really particularly looking to wrestle. We were able to convince her that there was a place for her. And she spent two years, you know, being Nick Aldis's valet. Mm. And people would say, what are you doing with her? She just stands there with her arms crossed. And over those couple of years, we were able to build up not only her as a personality, but also her confidence to where now she's a world champion. And for her to main event a worldwide pay-per-view and hold it down with another great professional wrestler in Taya Valkyrie, I think that's something to really point to. I think that shows you that and it's, you know, it's been a little bit behind the arc of modern culture, but the fact that two great professional women can hold down a card in 2022 is a great sign of progress and certainly a great testament to both of those athletes' arcs in professional wrestling. So I tend to look at the main events because at the end of the day, you can have a lot of cool stuff that you like, that you look forward to, but we always have to remember it's like what draws. When people talk about WrestleMania 3, what do they talk about? You know, they talk about, you know, the Great Savage match, and they talk about the main event, you know, and there was a great card and so many legendary Hall of Fame wrestlers, but people remember, you know, the magic moments and they remember the main events. So we'll see which of these matches. For example, I'm really excited about the MLW match with Davey Richards, the National Openweight Championship. I'm very happy that we were able to work this out with MLW against Thrillbilly Silas, a guy who's recently come to NWA. That guy's a beast, man. 6'7", you know, good 320. I mean, he can go. And he was literally recommended to us by, I think, Ricky Morton was standing there and said, hey, you should talk to this kid. And we just kind of put him on a match just to see how we went. And literally the minute he walked out of the ring, we said, we want you in the NWA. So we've been blessed to find talents like that along the way. So I look forward to something like that just as much as I look forward to an NWA main event match. The MLW thing being the fact that we have a relationship there finally, where we can present them, their matches, and hopefully they can present some of ours. Because obviously it's great for the fans. David Richards, one of the greatest professional wrestlers in the business, somebody I've worked with in the past at TNA. So really looking forward to working with him again. Stuff like that. I get just as excited for stuff like that because it's very important to our company. It's very important to the fans to show that every match on the card is valuable. That's why it is on the card.
I would say like there was something for everybody when I'm watching NWA. I'm a big Maxi Impaler fan. Like that's like kind of one of my favorite up and coming wrestlers. So it's great
to
see them.
Love Max.
Yeah, it's great to see them like on a card like every few episodes. Taya Valkyrie, same thing. And you guys are doing a lot of really cool things with women's wrestling right now.
Well, that's true. I mean, you bring up Max. Max is in the Gauntlet, the Burke Invitational. You know, that's going to be very interesting when you take someone of Max's skill and power against nine other women in a Gauntlet. That's something I really look forward to as well. And Max has been a pleasure to work with. Very talented person. I'm very excited that finally, I think after, you know, almost 5 years now that people are starting to see my particular vision of the NWA. I was criticized in the beginning and rightly so. I didn't take it the wrong way, but I was criticized for sort of not blowing a bunch of money and grabbing every available free agent and trying to throw together super cards. in essence, I took the approach of more of a, you know, like a Moneyball approach, where we had to build the NWA from the ground up, build our own culture. And I think now that you see it, where you take a Thrillbilly Silas, or you take a Max, and then when you put them in the NWA system, suddenly the matchups start to make sense, and there's things that can happen there that would only happen in the NWA. I'm very excited. I just talked to Max yesterday. Max is working in Japan right now. I was able to see some of that stuff. And so that's awesome. You know, I mean, the fact that Max can go out and fulfill the dream of working in Japan, and at the same time, come back and apply that power and that skill set to the NWA, where the women's division in particular is just really heated up.
Mm-hmm. I want to shout out the night two main event of Trevor and Tyrus, because it's something you guys do at the NWA is, when I look at people like, first of all, Trevor Murdoch as NWA champion is one of my favorite things going in wrestling right now, because he was there is this history of people who made it to what they would consider the big time in WWE and were sort of pigeonholed into a character that typically wouldn't allow them to rise above a certain level. Like, obviously, Trevor Murdoch was there in a very countrified gimmick as a tag team. Tyrus was the greatest nickname of all time, the Funkasaurus, the dancing dinosaur. But to see those two be able to rise above that and have what I'm sure will be a banger of a match for the NWA championship in the main event of an NWA pay-per-view is so dope.
Yeah, I think that's sort of one of the arguments that I've tried to make, is that if you look at maybe professional football would be an apt comparison. You can take one quarterback and put them in one system and they look like an average quarterback, and you put them in another system and suddenly they're winning Super Bowls. Who won the Super Bowl last year? Was it Matt Stafford, who, you know, labored for years in Detroit and went to a different system and now looks like a Hall of Famer overnight? When you take men of skill and size and power of a Trevor Murdoch or a Tyrus, Trevor's what, 6'7", about 320, 330. Mm-hmm. Tyrus 6'7", 375. Okay, if you throw them in a different system, maybe they don't work, or they don't sort of fit in. The toughness of the NWA, the historical toughness of the NWA, they're perfect. They're perfect. I couldn't ask for better men, better people to work with, people who really care at every level, not just about their own particular career trajectories, but also about the NWA product as a whole. So yeah, very proud to present that. And I think that's you see it right there on the poster. Not only the fact that we have helped rehabilitate people who in the public's minds maybe wouldn't have given them that other chance, mm-hmm. properly positioned, properly given those opportunities, show you why they're world-class talents. And you know, there may come a time where I'm able to kind of go out and blow money on the hottest, you know, young free agent and stuff like that. Until then, we need to work and find those talents that have been overlooked and underappreciated, and demonstrate why the people who had, you know, those decisions before, you know, missed the boat on those people.
I would say a prime example of that is Matt Cardona, someone who was very much the Jersey Shore sort of character in WWE, and it completely reinvented himself and ended up winning in addition to other titles, the NWA title. And then you guys branded a whole show around his gimmick, which, first of all, like I've been a fan of that guy since his WWE days. Like, I just like the way the directions he takes his character. What was behind that decision to take an NWA show and brand it around the champion? And then I'm wondering, what was your first thought when you got the call that, hey, I'm injured, I'm actually not going to be able to wrestle on the show?
Right. Well, real quick, it's all over the place, but first it's important to note that, you know, the reinvention of Matt Cardona is all Matt Cardona.
Yeah. Now,
we've been the beneficiary of his reinvention. And he demonstrated same thing, why other people who made those decisions about him really missed the boat. The fact that he always got over, you know, irregardless of whatever situation he was put in, was definitely a tell. As far as the branding of the pay-per-view, the Always Ready pay-per-view, which, as you noted, he was unfortunately injured for. When Matt came in the NWA, Matt said to me, kind of, where are the lines here? And I said, you don't understand, this is the NWA. There are no lines. You can go crazy here. And he said, I kind of want to go after, the NWA. And I said, have at it. I think the NWA is strong enough and tough enough to take the criticism. Sometimes we call it music, the elephant in the room. When people talk about the NWA being a retro or throwback product, they're really missing the boat of what the NWA is. The NWA is make a transition from a historical brand to a modern brand. Mm-hmm. So those criticisms are going to happen, whether they happen from the New York Times or Matt Cardona. Those criticisms are going to come, and those suspicions or those concerns are going to come. So I like that we're sort of dealing with the elephants in the room ourselves. So there were people in the company who did not like Matt being so vocally negative about the NWA, to use the wrestling term, that Matt was bearing the NWA. And I said, no, I don't think you understand here. I think what Matt's doing is really doing a service. He's saying out loud what some people are thinking and maybe saying or not saying. And by us dealing with it, we'll show them that assertion is wrong. And Matt's smart enough to know that he wouldn't be saying something. Put it this way, he wouldn't be in the NWA if he truly believed that the NWA was of the past, right? Mm-hmm. That's the point. Mm-hmm. And so Matt's really helped us turn the corner there. So naming a pay-per-view in Matt's honor, was part of that. It was like a hostile takeover type of thing. He comes in and he's able to use his leverage and his position. And then we were able to turn a very unfortunate situation where he tore his bicep into a thing where now I'm in a position where I had to negotiate with him. And which is kind of plays on the real life tension of me sort of being in the Cardona business, which I'm a big fan of, mm-hmm. and other people in the NWA not being a fan of me being in the Cardona business. I like to say these days, and then I'll get off it, I think the NWA has kind of gone back to its territorial roots, and that we have to work with talents like Matt Cardona, who, they work for Game Changer, they work for Impact, and we have to sort of find that balance between a very hot independent talent who has every decision in front of themselves. They can do whatever they want to do. They can show up, not show up. And if you want to know what kind of man Matt Cardona is, when he was injured, literally the day he got surgery, he held up the 10 pounds of gold and he said, I will be in Knoxville at the pay-per-view. I have nothing but great things to say about Matt Cardona.
You mentioned something there that I actually wanted to touch on, how NWA is sort of a bridge between the old and the new. I feel like you guys, there is a very visually, there are touches to the programming. I'm speaking specifically of Power right now, that feel vintage kind of throwback, but it's mixed with action of the modern day style. And also I feel like something you guys don't get enough credit for is utilizing YouTube to make you like utilizing new media to grow an audience for the NWA. AEW does it to a degree with Dark, but anybody who's seen Dark know that it's a lot of the very much the undercard talent at sort of trying to make a splash to earn their way up to Dynamite. NWA Power is putting out some top-notch shows for free, and you've been doing it rather obviously the pandemic threw some wrenches in there, but you've been doing it pretty consistently for a few years now. What was the decision behind actually saying we're gonna film these shows and we're just gonna put them out there in the world for people to consume? And what was that excitement like when you're like, oh, people are finding this and actually grabbing onto it?
Well, it goes back to what I was saying before about blowing money. There's different ways to blow money. If I'd blown a lot of money in the beginning and again grabbed every free talent that was out there and paid them to sort of put on a pro show, I wasn't really making a statement about what the NWA was. Secondarily, I had to build the NWA or rebuild the NWA. So the idea was, well, if I'm going to spend money, I'm going to spend it to create a product that's easily accessible and then try to build an audience that way. And we've had varying degrees of success there. The good part of it is that, and I saw this very much in my musical life, is if you can start to make a qualitative argument, then the price of something becomes less of an issue. Mm. When I was in a young band and nobody knew who we were and it was a $3 ticket, then it's a negotiation. when you're in a hot van and suddenly it's a $3 ticket to steal and you're selling out places all over the place. So we're starting to build that pressure now, finally, after 4 to 5 years, where now it's less of a negotiation and how much we're asking, more of a negotiation and how much time do you want to give us? And that's what's really important. And again, remember too, we exist in this super crowded ecosystem where we have to tape a certain number of shows. So we're not always able to put exactly what we want to put on television each and every week. And that's not to bury the talent. It's like, we can't always run the angles the way we want to run them. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't run a wrestler out there necessarily three times in one taping night and have them wrestle three matches. So we have to sort of work around those things. So I'm trying not to mumble about it too much. But the point is you try to pick a lane. And the lane that I picked was, I'm going to make a product that's, easily accessible, highly entertaining, very much pointed at the mainstream. I'll understand going in, and I knew that 4 years ago, that a lot of the wrestling bubble, as I call it, would not totally understand, because they only really respect people blowing money. And then over 4 or 5 years, I'll start to make the argument of the qualitative argument. And now when I say things like, somebody asked me the other day in a business meeting, where do you see the NWA end up being? I said that we will reach a point, I think, if we can continue this trajectory, we will be talked about in the same breath as the top companies. And we will eventually reach a point where we'll be able to land those types of deals where we will be able to be competitive at the top levels. If I said that 4 years ago, the only way people could have imagined that is if I was going to blow about $50 million of my own money or $50 million of somebody else's money. Now people can see it, and it's not a money issue. It's a culture issue. Mm-hmm. In essence, the NWA culture against other people's cultures, and people start to go, oh, he's actually doing something different. And that is what's so key about building a brand in the 21st century. You just have to say, here's who we are, and consistently say, here's who we are. And you're going to get criticized. Well, you're not this and you're not that. And you go, I know, I hear you, but here's who we are. And this is what we're doing. Like, take it or leave it. And as you can build a quality side of it, that argument gets easier and easier to make.
So I guess you've been a wrestling fan most of your life. What would be your first wrestling memory? What's the thing that drew you into professional wrestling?
Well, I had a very unfortunate situation in my life where when I was young, I ended up living with my great grandmother, who was a Belgian immigrant in her 80s, and my grandfather, who was probably about 60 at the time. And they watched professional wrestling and roller derby circa 1971, 72. So here's me as a 4-year-old, 5-year-old kid watching, you know, Dick the Bruiser in his prime, Nick Bockwinkel, Vern Gagne. I had no idea what I was watching. You know, how could I? I was just a little kid. And it was the rugged toughness and the sort of the raw edges of the thing that sort of, you know, congealed in my mind is like, oh, this is what professional wrestling is. You know, there's that old adage where people talk about, I've heard Kevin Nash say many times, like, you should be the type of person who, when you walk through an airport, people turn their heads and say, who's that? So I very much believe that, because I grew up with people like that. Mm-hmm. Even a crippler Ray Stevens, who was probably about 5'10", 6 feet, he had an aura about him that told you he was the guy you didn't want to mess with at the end of the bar, even when you're 5, 6 years old. So that's always in my mind. If you look at that poster and you don't see the toughest, meanest people, kind of what are you looking at? And that's why the NWA and me are sort of aligned at this point in terms of what I want to represent. And oftentimes I jokingly say, in many ways, the NWA is more like the AWA than the NWA, you know, because in Chicago, we very much grew up on the AWA. But again, the AWA came out of the NWA with the Gagne. So it's 6 1/2 dozen of the other. But there's a certain type of toughness. Sorry, repeating myself. But that's, you know, we all remember that first time I went to Wrigley Field as a kid, and, you know, there's the Ivy and stuff. Well, first time I saw wrestling was literally Dick the Bruiser, you know, with a cigar in his hand, screaming down the television at me, you know, and scaring the life out of me, or Harley Race scaring the life out of me.
Oh, that's amazing. Like, yeah, because, yeah, for me, like, I grew up in Central California, and we had WWF programming, and all I can remember is Roddy Piper being an awesome, awesome villain. Like, I hated him, and I loved so much that I hated him. And then the pomp and circumstance of Macho Man. Those are the two memories that first come to mind. The with Macho, it's the frills hanging off his jacket, the music, everything. And then Roddy Piper just being such a dick and thinking, like, wow, like, that must be the best job.
But let me stop you real quick, because here's what's so important is, see, as a kid, you connected with the you know, the outsized end of the characters, but you're also talking about two of the greatest workers of all time.
Absolutely.
So this is where I get grumpy as a wrestling fan is, you can put people over all day. You could say, I like this, and I love this, and I love it. If you can't get it done at that other level in the ring. And by the way, the greatest workers, I will point out, they can work with anybody. Mm-hmm. They can work with anybody, any size, any weight division. You know what I mean? You go find me a bad Macho Man match. You won't find one because it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. All. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't exist. How is it possible the guy never had a bad match? He's just one of the great workers, right? So that's what I'm saying is the public, and we're talking like they're not here, right? The public will find the things that hooks them, you mm-hmm. know, a vibe, a color, a promo, a thing, a run-in, blah, 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 blah. But people in the business, you know, it's really about who can work.
Well, and I guess that's the thing. Me as a kid, like the initial draw was those loud characters, but like there had to be something to actually keep the hooks in. And holy cow, watching those two like cut it up in the ring with a variety of people, it's, yeah, you're right. There is no bad Macho Man Randy Savage match because I don't even know how he could be capable of such a thing. And like, it's one of those situations where no matter how strong a character is, yes, you have to have that backing of being able to go, like, ultimately, looking back now from 2022 to the early 90s or 1990, I guess, the Undertaker gimmick is, it's a little, like, in modern day terms, it's a little bit hokey. But like, man, not only it connected then, and then watching a guy that big move as well as he did and be able to do, like, make you believe what he was doing in the ring, that makes that character go so far over the top.
Well, that was part of the, that's just quick diversion. That was part of the interesting sort of criticism of the WWF style when they went very cartoony, right? Because all the guys that had come out of territorial wrestling, they said, you're killing the business because you're going so far into the kind of the cartoon end that this is going to kill the business. And Vince, of course, proved him wrong, and the business got even bigger. Mm-hmm. When people got tired of that style, then what happened? Then the business shifted back towards the sort of the realistic. And that's where you see a great worker like Taker shift back towards, you know, a greater sense of realism. The American Badass character was part of that for a while.
I remain a fan of the American Badass. Like, man. That came out about at the exact right time where I was like, man, motorcycles are cool. Limp Bizkit's kind of cool, I guess.
You admitted, you liked it. We like, liked it back then. It was the
look. I was in it for the Limp Bizkit. I was not in it for the Kid Rock.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, so I guess the point I'm trying to make is we're on a cyclical thing here, right? And mm-hmm. and the question then becomes, is the rise of independent wrestling to the international level, or maybe more artfully said, the Japanese style of wrestling raised to the international level to where it's now an international draw. Is that something that will sustain and grow an audience? You know what I mean? Or is that mm-hmm. something that will have its own version of a variant and kind of go down a different road? You know, I'm obviously heavily invested in characters and realism. I believe that no matter what is going on to the left or right of the NWA, you know, if we're the sort of the historic middle, I believe the business will always be solidly placed exactly where we are. But that's not to say trends don't matter. I think you've seen where we've tried to make more emphasis, particularly on the junior heavyweight division. Colby Carino, PJ Hawks, Kerry Morton, and of course Homicide being the champ. Rhett Titus, Mike Bennett, even sometimes working in the junior heavyweight division. We have a 225 weight limit, so yes, we acknowledge that there is a lot of interest in cruiserweights going on right now in the fandom. But at the same time, we try to say, okay, well, what makes the NWA version of that different? So we put a 225 weight limit. So when you watch an NWA cruiserweight match or junior heavyweight match, you're going to see a lot more physicality than you would pretty much anywhere else. Mm-hmm. It's probably outside of Japan.
It definitely feels more, the junior weight division feels a lot more powerhousey, which I really like. It feels harder hitting, I'd say.
Thank you. Well, part of that is my experiences in TNA, right? The X division was one of the best things about TNA's, heyday. But being there on the booking side and being there and producing talent, it became this kind of go-to thing of like, oh, pay-per-view, we're going to start the six-man, six guys are going to go out and do a bunch of other tons of crazy stuff, no-sell the shit out of everything, and then there's going to be a champ. And then we'll go with pay-per-view cycle, do it all over again. So after I saw about 57 of those matches with really great talent, Davey Richards being one of those, right? Mm-hmm. So many names jump out in my head when I think about the people that were working there then. It ultimately bothered me that it sort of didn't go anywhere. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That it was sort of like, it was just kind of feeding different people into one end of the machine. And then when people left, there were just new people to do new crazy shit. So that's why it's important for me to have the NWA thing be very branded in a particular way.
I appreciate that, because as someone who loved early X Division stuff in TNA, seeing even what it is now, it does definitely feel like that. It feels like it's how many like six man matches can we put together where people have to climb things and do crazy jumps off of things. But like there's so much talent, and like historically there's been so much talent laced throughout that division, that, and talent of all sizes, that like it's kind of ridiculous when you look at if you just look at a list of former X Division champions, it's a who's who of like modern day pro wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely make the argument that it was the X Division that sort of was part of what launched this. I would trace it back a little further to when Eddie and Guerrero and Jericho, were basically treated as mid-carders in WCW. I said on the Jericho podcast that if you really want to call the Elite Revolution, I think it started in late 90s WCW. And I think that TNA was wise to pick up on that and make it more of a featured thing, because obviously there was something about that was getting over. I think it's hard for me, and I used to say this in the booking meetings at TNA, it's hard for me if you're going to ask somebody to go out and do these crazy, dangerous things, if there's sort of not a storyline point for it. In essence, you're just doing it to do it, and then you do it some more and do it some more. So, I think it's gotten certainly more sophisticated. Certainly Impact's gotten more sophisticated in that regard. And it's one of the signature parts of their product, which is, again, why I want to differentiate what makes us different. Because I didn't want to ape what somebody else was doing or other people are doing. But at the same time, I also want to say, well, what makes it NWA? So if you look at who is in our X division, our junior heavyweight division, you can see that everybody in there is pretty much tough as nails.
You clearly know a lot about wrestling history. How important is it for you, like the NWA, no matter how you look at it, is the most, I would argue, the most storied wrestling company ever. Like its roots go back so far. It is such an important piece of professional wrestling history. How important is it for you, now that you're essentially the custodian of that history, you are the one who essentially brought the NWA back from not really being much of a thing to the point where it's just thriving more and more, as well as keeping that history alive?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can take it in a lot of different ways. I'll start here. I bought the NWA. I was like, cool, I bought the NWA, right? It's like, what did I buy, right? And then I started doing my research, and there was so much that I didn't know. And 5 years later, there's still so much I didn't know. I think I could be wrong, and somebody will yell at me, I'm sure. But I certainly know it was at one point when the NWA was a territorial governing body, the National Wrestling Alliance, there were over 100 different NWA territories. there were seven key ones in America, but they were everywhere. I mean, you know, Amarillo and, you know, Mexico and, I mean, you just Japan, it's Australia. So you can go down these rabbit holes with the history, and it's just insane. You know, like there'll be NWA Australia, and then there's the time that Harley went over there, and the, you know, there's all that, but then there's also the localized versions and the localized belts and all this stuff. So it's very humbling, because if you think about it, it's like sort of a, like if you look at the Major League Baseball, one of the great blights on modern sports in the 20th century was the fact that there was a point where all the major leagues disbarred African-American players for being involved. You know, I think there's one extant issue of an African-American player in the 1800s being allowed to play, but for the most part, it was a prohibitive thing until Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. And so in the 21st century, you cannot talk about the history of any major sporting league without acknowledging that those leagues were also built on what were called the Negro leagues, or, you know what I mean? That Ernie Banks, who was somebody I got to know a little bit, Hall of Fame Cub player, had it when he was very young, played in those leagues. There were all-star games between the stars of the African American leagues versus the stars of the major leagues. That's all kind of been not swept under the rug, but like, it's not something anybody wants to really claim. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to make a point about a race or social history. What I'm trying to say is that if you're gonna lead the NWA and you don't really appreciate everything that went into building the NWA up until 1948, and then what went on past 1948, and then what happened, you know, in the late 80s and 90s, if you don't sort of appreciate all that history, then you're sort of just wearing the hat, you know, or the t-shirt, and you say, yeah, it's mine, but it's not, you're not really taking possession. In essence, you're not really paying honor to those that came before. That's the point I'm trying to make. So you must pay, you know, like the bad point I'm making about the differentiation of the leagues in the 20th century, what's the same thing with the NWA? I can't not recognize all the stuff that happened before the 48, and they formed an association which got investigated by the government for collusion and all this stuff, right? I'm saying it very inartfully, but what I'm trying to say is if you don't realize all the shoulders that you're standing on, you don't really know what you're doing. The difficult part is it doesn't necessarily translate to a 22-year-old fan, hey, it's the NWA, the GOAT. Yeah, so what? I'm a fan of blank. You know, tell me why I should like it. You can't wave a piece of paper and say, history, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything to them, and that's okay. But if you can set it up where at some point you are able to connect them to that history, they like what they're seeing, they vibe in what they're seeing, and then you can connect them back and they go, oh, wow, there's this tradition, there's this history. Now you start to look at why the NFL does what the NFL does, why MLB does what they do, because suddenly it starts to feel like there's a greater, it's not, you haven't just won the World Series, you've entered the history books. You're not just, you haven't just won the Stanley Cup, now you're actually on the cup, you know? And that's kind of what you've gotten into now. And as I like to say, and I'll get off it, is people can talk all they want about this company, that company. When you see a professional wrestler win the 10 pounds of gold, and you see them backstage holding that belt, and they know that their name is now part of that history book, it's pretty humbling to see that as somebody who's not in the business on that side. That's when it tells me how important it is to them. And I know how it is important to me over here, but when I see that, when you see the tears in people's eyes and what it means to their family and their all the hard work, that's when you know.
I'm actually glad that's how you ended your answer, because it feeds into arguably the most controversial question I'm going to ask you. The World's Heavyweight Championship, we all know it as the 10 pounds of gold. Have you put that thing on a scale?
It is heavy. I don't think we've actually weighed. Sorry, my son's here. I don't think we've actually weighed it, but it is heavy. It might even be 12 pounds for all I know. It's heavy. It's not light. I tell you that.
Okay, good. It's one of those things. Like, you, I've heard 10 pounds of gold all my life, but I've yet to see someone weigh it. And I have never, obviously.
That would be a good,
I
know, you gave me a good idea for like a heel thing.
There you go.
You have the heel come out and say, no, you guys are lying. This ain't 10 pounds of gold.
This is clearly 9 pounds, 8 ounces of gold.
Yeah, I think somebody actually did weigh it at some point. I feel like there's a memory in there somewhere. Like somebody's like, oh, it's 8 pounds, 8 ounces or something. But put this way, it's stuck, and that's all that matters. At least put this way, at least when you say it, people know what you're talking about.
It's mm-hmm. and it just, and honestly, it sounds so cool. Just like I am the carrier of the 10 pounds of gold. You say that and people know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, that's, we've gone on now, you know, we did the ladies belt in honor of Mildred Burke, you know, the belt mm-hmm. that I own, actually, crazily enough, you know, the original belt.
From you own the original?
Oh, you didn't know that?
I did not know. That's so cool.
Yeah. For anybody who doesn't know, I was able through the granddaughter of Mildred Burke to purchase her original belt from 1937, I believe it's from.
Wow.
So if you look, Google any pictures of Mildred Burke with the belt, I actually own that belt. So we modeled the modern NWA belt on the Burke belt, including with the person's picture. The title holder is actually in the belt.
Oh, I literally just Googled the belt and it is a picture of you holding the belt.
There I am.
I love it.
It's awesome. So again, history, right? I'm a bit of a mark in this way, where they call them in the business belt marks. When you hold a belt and you think of all the people who, you know, held that belt, were around that belt, the locker rooms that belt was in, the rings that belt was in, you know, it's like a who's who of the business from the late 30s into the 60s, really. So it's very humbling. So we call the female belt the Burke now. I've been thinking about naming the junior heavyweight championship belt the Hodge, because Danny Hodge, I think, held it something like seven times. I think Ricky Morton's also held it about seven times. So I'm sure Ricky Morton might have an argument there. The Morton, although it gets into the restaurant chain, which ironically, my is my best friend in the world. His family started that restaurant chain.
Really?
Yeah. So.
Well, clearly they should hire Ricky Morton as a spokesperson.
I'm on it.
I mean, come on. Now I have to ask, the Burke belt, is that the only belt you have, or do you have a collection of your own?
I've tried to buy others. Unfortunately, Conrad Thompson, I think, beats me to every
auction. He buys every belt. The dude has so many belts, it's ridiculous.
Now, I told Conrad when he found out that I bought the Mildred Burke belt, he you know, in his inimitable accents, how the hell did you buy that? And I said, trust me, I bought it directly from Mildred Burke's granddaughter, and I made sure that you didn't know, because you would have bought it out from under me. No, unfortunately, I don't have any other historic belts. I've looked into some. There's one belt that I just recently found out that a historic wrestler owns, a historic belt actually related to the Burke belt.
Oh, wow.
And I did offer to buy that, and I have not yet received a response. But I would like to own more. Again, I that history... It's hard to quantify, but when I look at the Mildred Burke belt, I have a few other things, it makes me go like, okay, you know, you're going to have to work hard here. This is bigger than you. Mm-hmm. Cause in my music life, it's mostly about me and my band, right? Mm-hmm. In the NWA, it's about me and a lot of other things and a lot of other people. And so there's something about that where you kind of occasionally need to be reminded, like, hey, you know, keep your eyes on the prize and stay true to what this thing's about.
Awesome.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us, and everybody listening, NWA 74, August 20th. Oh, I don't have the dates in front of me anymore. 27th to 28th.
August 27th to 28th. I'll be releasing the official card any second. So maybe by the time this airs, it'll be out, but it's pretty crazy card over two nights.
I'm looking just at the names involved. I'm like, yeah, this is going to be a very good time. The two night show. I feel like that is something that we're getting closer and closer. Like, it's becoming a little bit more common. What makes it important for you guys to run a two night show? Just to throw that in there, because I'm very curious.
I think it sort of says to the public that you're not going anywhere, and you don't have to watch, but you will pay attention. Because how could you not pay attention to a two-night pay-per-view? Because there's so much stuff that's going to happen. Invariably, there's going to be some results, some headlines, some run-in, something that's going to make you go, okay, the NWA, remember, 4 or 5 years ago, the NWA couldn't get arrested.
Yeah.
And I said something about a year ago about how, and of course, it got turned into a clickbait headline. But, you know, the WWE had passed on buying the NWA. The guy who sold it to me had taken it to the WWE and they wanted nothing to do with it. Because as far as they were concerned, they had enough NWA IP already. They didn't need to buy the trademark. No one was ever going to bring it back. Why spend their money? So lo and behold, here we are 5 years later. Of course, it got turned into, it was so worthless. No, it wasn't worthless. They just didn't think that anybody would ever rise up and be competitive with the name NWA ever again. So yeah, that's the thing. And here, it's super crowded, right? If you're 20 years old, heck, if you're 30 years old, you've grown up with video games, you know, every kind of live event sports, 8,000 cable channels, now over the top networks where you can watch things on demand. So to get anybody's attention for even 5 minutes, particularly in wrestling, that is an accomplishment. So the two night pay-per-view says, look, we're not going anywhere, and you will pay attention even if you don't want to, because invariably you're going to run into something that's going to pique your interest. And over time, we will wear you down and you will come around to understanding why we're doing what we're doing.
Hell yeah.
No silly this week, no lawyers coming on, no prediction bots, no hackers, real serious Matt, wrestling program.
And I'll tell you what, I don't even care to shake these zipper blues. And we don't know just where our bones will rest. To dust, I guess, forgotten and absorbed into the earth below.
Mm-hmm.
Double cross the vacant and the bored.
They're not sure just
what we have in store. Morphine City, slipping dudes down to sea.
Dork.
Yeah. Before the episode started, I said, hold on just a second. Before you like,
we were bringing up lyrics.
I pulled up the lyrics to 1979. Because, like, honestly, I love that song to death. I don't know 85 to 90% of the lyrics of that song because it's just all over the place. And I love it.
I think about this a lot during about 90s music is that I love a lot of stuff from the 90s. I mean, that was our teenage years. I don't know the lyrics, like the real lyrics of most songs. I just know like a summation of it, like any Pearl Jam song. Like, I don't know a lyric to it. It's just even... rest his head on a pillow made of concrete? Is that it?
Matt, I'm going to ask you a very important question right now. How many of the lyrics do you know to Semi-Charmed Life by Third Eye Blind?
I never really liked that song. I know Doot Doot Doot. But Semi-Charmed Life, baby, I want something else to get me through this.
Listen.
I know the chorus.
I think it's about, I'm pretty sure it's about drug abuse.
I'm sure.
I'm packed and I'm holding. I'm smiling. She's living. She's golden. She lives for me. Says she lives for me, ovation, her own motivation. She comes round and she goes down on me.
I remember that one.
And I make do whatever what you want to do coming over you. Keep on smiling what we go through. One stop to the rhythm that divides you. Matt, and I speak to you like the chorus to the verse, chop around line.
Why are we talking about
chopping around line like a coda with a curse? Come on, like a freak show takes the stage.
Why are we reading we give lyrics him the games to Third we play, Eye Blind?
She says, what?
Why are we reading lyrics to Third Eye Blind?
I don't know. I got nothing else to talk about.
So I guess that's it for this week.
Yeah. Thank you to Billy Corgan.
Yeah, thank you.
NWA. What is it? What is the Power? Show, Matt? No. They have a big pay-per-view coming up.
That's NWA 74 that is taking place August 27th and 28th. Now I got to double check because
it's August 27th and 28th. Trevor Murdoch versus Tyrus in the main event of night two for the world title. And then I believe the main event of night one is Camille versus Taya Valkyrie for the NWA Women's Championship. Yes.
Yes.
That's pretty fantastic.
Anyways, that's it for this week. We'll see you guys next week. Chris, any final words?
Oh, yeah, Matt. I think it's very clear what my final words here are going to be. But just so you know, the sky was gold. It was rose. I was taking sips of it through my nose. And I wish I could get back there somewhere back, someplace back there in the place where we used to start. Do, 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 do. I'm done.
Step back from that bridge, my friend. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to Wrestle Buddies. We hope you had at least almost as much fun as we did. Go ahead and rate and review us on the Apple Podcast app. You can email us questions at WrestleBuddies@GameSpot.com or find us over on Twitter at Wrestle Buddies. I am at Chris Hayner. He is at I'm Matt Elfring. See you next week.
WrestleBuddies is a copywritten GameSpot website podcast. You do not have permission to use anything contained within the episode, or you'll be sued by me, Dog Dad Lawyer. I've got a dog named Clarence. He's a beautiful pug.